Welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. The Colorado Department of Human Services announced last year that the state's foster care system needs more than 1,000 new foster families by 2019, including more parents who identify as Hispanic, Black, LGBTQ, or American Indian. Based on their analysis, Colorado currently has just over 2,000 foster families and needs 1,200 more foster families to accommodate the kids in need of care. On Local Motion today, we'll be exploring the issue of foster care locally. We'll talk about the process of becoming a foster parent, how to be an advocate for foster kids through the organization CASA, and why the need for foster parents is growing. Rebecca Lansdowne is the regional director of WIMSPIRE, which is a private licensed child placement agency in Colorado. The license is issued by the Colorado Department of Human Services and authorizes them to certify foster homes and place children in these homes. I interviewed her about the process.
So in our area on the Western Slope, the primary reason that we see children that are being removed from their families is due to substance abuse. Sometimes there's cases where it's just a case of neglect, maybe there's no substance abuse issues, maybe the family just needs to be able to get back on their feet, and then they can, quickly get the services they need and their children can be returned. But in most of our cases, we're looking at a year or longer, sometimes less, depending on how quickly a family can work through a family service plan. On the Western Slope, I guess just to reiterate, it's really more of an issue of substance abuse. Particularly in the last 5 years, there's been a huge push to place children within their own family structure. So a grandma, an aunt, or an uncle, or even somebody that's just known the family for a long time that's willing to take the child into their home. This is less traumatic for a child to be placed with somebody that they know. And so we do certify probably 75% of our homes right now are kinship homes.
Can you talk about the experience for the child from the day they're removed from their home, going into foster care, and then what happens during and after being placed in foster care?
So typically when a child's removed, it depends on the county, but they will call various placement agencies if a county does not certify their own foster homes. Mesa County does. They still have so many children that they have to rely on agencies to help them with foster homes. Montrose and Delta do not certify their own homes. So when a child is then brought into care, then they call and they try to find a home that is an appropriate fit for that child. And so if we get a call for a teenager, we're looking for a home that says, I want to take teenagers, and then this is my skill set to work with them. So we're very careful about where we place children and if they're going to be a good fit in that home, not only for the other children there, but for that family as well, for their own biological children and the foster parents. So once they're in care within our system, then generally a court-appointed attorney is given to them, which is a GAL, and so they have that support. They're often given a CASA advocate, and then they're set up into therapy if it's needed. Typically it is. There's various types of therapy, though. They'll go through those services while they're in foster care. Hopefully they're able to, discharge back home, and they'll have all those skills in place. So.
And what do you look for in a foster family or parent? What are some of the qualities or situation that a person could be in that would make them a good fit to be a foster parent?
So there are so many different qualities. I think there's a lot of false information about what it takes to be a foster parent. So we have foster parents from all walks of life, to be honest. We have single people, we have same gender couples, we have traditional foster parents and kinship parents. And what we're looking for is people that are willing to really, this job takes a lot of flexibility and willingness to learn and try to parent from new perspectives. So we really look for people, one, that want to help kids, that it's, you know, they're just saying, this is in my heart to help children. That's the first piece. It's really important. And so we go through an entire process. In the state of Colorado, in order to be a foster parent or a kinship parent, you have to go through a safe home study. And so we do background checks and reference checks, and we do several interviews. The home study is invasive, but it's very important that we follow every single step because we want to make sure children are being placed into safe homes. So, you know, somebody might have had a ticket 5 years ago. That does not disclude you as being a foster parent. So what we're really looking at is where you are now in your life and what you can offer children. So that's the goal, is to help children heal. And if somebody can come on and that's, you know, also their goal, then we can work together. And we offer a lot of training in order to help people get the services that they need and the skills that they need, because oftentimes, you know, they're dealing with difficult situations. So
how are foster families reimbursed?
What happens is counties are reimbursed, well, some of them, a little bit through the state, and then also that money then is called a stipend, which goes to foster parents, and that money is to cover the cost of food and clothing and activities and transportation. There's a lot of transportation with foster children because they often have, you know, sometimes two or three visits a week and therapy, and then we try to make sure that they're involved in some type of activity that they're interested in. Not necessarily, doesn't always have to be a sport, but maybe a drama club or something like that. So transportation is a huge piece of that. So foster parents receive a stipend for the care that they're providing. Mm-hmm. In Delta County, so the state rate typically, it's around $30 a day, a little more, a little less. It depends on the, some kids have a needs-based care, which will make their care a little bit higher, and other kids have a little bit less than that.
And what would you tell someone who thinks they might want to be a foster parent right now? Because there is such a great need.
There is a huge need right now. I just read an article this morning that, you know, Mesa County alone had 45 children in the last year, 45 teenagers in the last year that had to be placed out of county because there's not enough homes. So that's a significant amount of children that are being placed, and those were just teenagers. That doesn't include their younger children that were placed out of county. So there is a huge need all over from, you know, San Miguel County all the way to Mesa County. Those are the areas that we cover. And what I would tell people is that, you know, if you've ever thought about it, like, give us a call and let's talk about it. Because you don't, even if you just call or check out our website and do an inquiry form, we're not going to hound you and pressure you, but we can definitely have a conversation with you around what it looks like, what you can expect, and the services and the support that we put in place to help people. So, you know, it is a process to go through and become a foster parent, but it's an important process. And so if you're just even curious about it, we even recommend, you know, starting out during respite for current foster families. You still have to go through all the background checks and everything to provide respite, but because we're always looking at safety, but at least, you know, start somewhere and get your feet wet. Or, and I always tell people, you know, another place to start is be a CASA advocate, because we need CASA advocates as well. And that's a good place to start because they're working with foster children. So it would give you kind of an idea.
Why do you think there's such a high need? I mean, it's rising, the amount of kids that need to go into foster care. Do you have any idea why?
I honestly feel like it's just the substance abuse issues in our area. The opiate epidemic is real, and we hear a lot about it on the news, and it's really affected a lot of different families in this area, and it's causing, you know, a lot of disruptions in families and families to be broken. So I feel like that is the main reason that we're seeing such a high level of kids coming into care.
Well, thank you so much. I've been talking to Rebecca Lansdowne, who's regional director of WIMSPIRE, which is a child placement agency in Colorado. And they certify foster homes and place children and youth in foster homes. Thanks again for being with me today.
Thank you.
You're tuned into Local Motion on KVNF, where we're exploring the topic of foster care. I'm speaking with Carlton Mason, who's the executive director of CASA, which stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates for Children. The purpose of CASA is to ensure that abused and neglected children receive high-quality, sensitive, effective, and timely representation in court hearings to determine their guardianship. Thank you for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So can you start by going into some more detail about how CASA is involved in the foster care system in particular? What's the role of this organization in that process?
Okay. Generally what happens is allegations or a referral is made to the county, and the county then will assess whether or not the kids are safe or unsafe and determine if they should be removed from the home. If they are removed, and sometimes when they're not removed, the county will begin a case. The Department of Child Services will begin a case, open up a case for that family. Once they do that, it goes through the court, and then the court has the option to request an advocate on behalf of the child, a CASA advocate. The individuals that do that advocacy are community members like yourself that go through about 30 hours of training. And when that case comes across and there's available advocate and it fits, maybe the age range or the gender that they feel they could most effectively serve or volunteer, the court will send through an appointment, and they are appointed by the court as a friend of the court to meet, visit with that youth or that child, and then report back to the court what's going on. These same kids have been removed from the home, so they are in foster care or group homes or kin care. And so our advocates will quite often spend some time with the foster family or get to know them as well, because that's where the child is, and just kind of monitor the whole case from an outsider's perspective, from a community member's perspective, and bring back what they're seeing and what they're hearing from that child. Doesn't always mean that, for instance, what the child wants is, you know, if you've had kids, you know what they want isn't always in their best interest. But it does mean that the child has a voice, and that the child, what's going on in their life, it will be heard. There are also guardian ad litems, which are attorneys on behalf of the child. Their role is very similar. They come at it from a legal point of view. Our advocates come at it from community members and just watching a system and meeting usually every other week, maybe twice a month, some more often with their kid. Maybe they go out to the park, go to coffee, go to the animal shelter, all kinds of things, and just try to get to know that kid and hear how that kid is reacting to this whirlwind of chaos that they're in the midst of at the moment.
Hmm. So it's more than just an advocate in the courts. It's also just an advocate in a way.
Yeah, so the CASA advocates will have access to all the court records, what goes through the court. They make a lot of contact with the caseworkers involved, with the foster family, with the guardian ad litems. There's a lot of communication that goes on there. And I guess I would stress they're just one voice in this process of a really comprehensive effort by a lot of people to try to give that child the very best path forward that they can obtain.
What's the training like for court-appointed advocates? Is it helpful if you have a legal background or?
No, it's not necessary. I'll be honest. We have everyone from business owners to school teachers to nurses. coming in, the things we look for, the training, let me get back to the training. The training's about 30 hours, and some of it's done in classroom, some of it's done on your own time. And during that process, you'll actually get to speak one-on-one in the class setting with caseworkers, with judges quite often, with attorneys that are involved, and get to hear, you know, how they're coming at it, their view of both CASA and the process and how it works. It's very complex. So you go through this 30 hours of training, and what do we look for as an organization? We're looking for individuals that can respect that there will be differences. We will have differences of opinion. We may not, just like we don't all raise our kids the same way, there's no reason to anticipate that we would enter into this process and all view it from the same perspective. And so occasionally it can be differences of opinion in how to go forward or where a child should be placed or who they should have access to. So what we really look for in our advocates is how well do you handle those differences? You know, can you maintain a very professional interaction or environment, knowing that sometimes you have to step back and you don't get what you want. Other times you have the opportunity to make a huge impactful change for this child, but it's never consistent. It's never always. And so that is one of our big things that we look for is how well do you handle a situation where you can't always control the outcome.
What did it look like in the courts before they had advocates who were available to the kids? How did they go through proceedings? And
Allie, that's a great question. So I've been involved with CASA for 5 years, and my background has nothing to do with the legal system or social services. CASA has been around since the 1970s. We've been serving out of Montrose, the six counties of the 7th Judicial District, since 2000. There are still kids that go through the system without a CASA advocate. And I want to be clear on two things. One, I think the CASA advocate does bring a lot of value to that young person's life. Secondly, though, I will also say kids that the systems that are in place are doing everything they possibly can to give that child the highest level of support they can. Mm-hmm. It is complex. There are regulatory issues. There are oversight. There's government issues as to how they can engage, how fast they have to engage. It's a complex system. So would I sit here and say that, well, if they don't have a CASA, they're doomed? Not at all. Not at all. But I do think every child should have that opportunity to have a healthy relationship with adult who genuinely cares about what happens in their future. Outside of all the other benefits that come through a CASA, whether it's, you know, helping with respite care or taking the kid out of the home just for an hour so that foster mom can get a break or you know, watching a case and making sure something doesn't fall through the cracks. Those are all valuable. But what child wouldn't want to have that relationship that says, you know, I'm actually here simply because I care about you. And I'm one more. Doesn't mean anyone else doesn't care about you. It just means you have one more connection to normalcy, to stability, to empathy.
Hmm. Can the advocates maintain a relationship with the kids after the proceedings are complete?
That kind of depends where the child is placed and if the individual that holds custody of that child when it's comes to completion is open to that. It is not uncommon for kids that go through the advocacy or that experience a CASA to end up adopted. And if they're adopted, it's a simple question to the adoptive parents. Can this advocate continue to be a part of that child's life? Quite often the answer is yes. There are also, for reasons that family finds, there may be reasons where they say, we would prefer to to start a new chapter.
I've been talking to Carlton Mason, who's the executive director of CASA, and CASA stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. And the purpose of the program is to help children that are going through court proceedings in court hearings to determine their guardianship. And before we go, how can people be involved with CASA if they would like to?
Great question. First off, if a person's interested in knowing more about CASA and what we do as an organization, I would urge them to call us. They can call our office at 970-249-0337. We would love to talk to them. They can stop by our offices. Our main office in Montrose. We also have a small office here in Delta. We actually have an office in Gunnison. They can stop by. But please reach out to us. We're always looking for more volunteers. Our program also does over 6,000 hours of supervised visitation for families each year that don't have custody or maybe can't visit their child unless they're in a safe, supervised environment. We also have opportunities with older youth that need kind of like life coaches, in a sense, mentors, individuals that would be interested in just spending some time and developing a relationship and providing feedback, an ear for a kid to be heard.
That was Carlton Mason from the organization CASA. We're talking about foster care today on Local Motion. And finally, we'll hear from Grand Junction resident Nancy about her experience as a foster parent.
It was something I felt meant to do, and it was kind of scary because I didn't know anything about it, really. We still have the first young lady that we took in. We still have her. She's decided to stay with us till she's 18. We got her at age 12, and then we, a week later, we got three little boys. And it was kind of a whoa, you know, because these little boys, when they came in the house, they were just running and screaming. But I don't know. It's been a blessing, actually, because these kids, they're really thankful for everything you do for them. They're really thankful for each meal that they get, and they thank you for their meals. The first time I took the boys to the car wash, they got all excited. And because it was the first car wash they'd gone through, and they wanted to go again. So I said, well, let's wait a while, and then we'll go through again. it just seems like the littlest things that we do, the kids are just really good about being appreciative. And it's been a lot of ups and downs as far as emotionally, you know, when they do get adopted out and that kind of stuff, you're going to miss them. Because we've been asked every time we get kids, if we would want to move in the direction of adopting any of these children. And there's a lot of times, you know, my heart is going, oh, maybe. But I also know that my husband has seven children. He's got four that he adopted. I have three, and I adopted my oldest. And so total, we already have 10 children of our own, even though they are grown, except for the two youngest of his children. We are, we're here for the kids. I mean, we love the kids. We want to help them out as much as we can and just keep them in a safe environment and just have fun with them while they're here and pray that they either go back to their parents or get the best adoptive home possible. And with our boys, we still call them our boys because there's actually four of them. The older brother came later, a few months later after we got the three boys. And they went to a really, really good adoptive home. And we've seen them, and that was 3 years ago, and we've seen them, four times since then or something. They're up in Loveland, and they're doing wonderful. And it just really makes us feel good that they've got a really, really good home, and parents will love them, and they're just allowed to be little boys.
Obviously, you and your husband have been taking children in various different ways for a long time. It's obviously something that not only do you want to do, but you're good at it, I'm sure, at this point.
Well, see, I worked in the school system for a lot of years. I homeschooled my kids when they were real young. And then when they hit about middle school, you know, I put them into public school. And my husband, he's a counselor, and he's worked in the school system working with kids in the past. And he's just very easygoing and just a great guy, you know. And we work well together. So, you know, and the kids know that they can't work us against each other because we discuss things. And so discussion, communication is a really, really big thing. And the kids have to know that you're both on the same page. I think that's the biggest thing. But they also have to know that, you know, that they're safe and that they're loved. A lot of times I think the biggest problem is with people is, you know, you've heard so many horror stories. You always hear the worst, just like when you're pregnant, everybody tells you the worst story. But these kids are just kids, and they're good kids. I mean, we've had some really, really good kids, and that's all they want is, you know, it's none of their fault. It's not the kids' fault that they are in foster care. I don't know. You just got to be open to it, for one thing, and love kids.
How do you show love to these kids?
Oh, it's just, I don't know. I think it's just like with your own kids. You're there for them when they fall down. You're there for them just to give them hugs. You know, I mean, as they get up in the morning or as they go off to school, before they go to bed, you tell them stories. We're a Christian family, so we take them to church and we try to, as far as faith-based, we try to teach them that, hey, it's not just us that loves you, but you've got somebody a whole lot bigger than us that loves you no matter where you are. And so that they can use prayer when they need it to, you know, kind of help them feel safe when we're not around. The biggest thing is just being there for them. And they always know that they've got a meal and that they, you know, they've got breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And that is a big thing to these kids, food. I mean, it's a big thing for the kids to know that they're going to have their next meal without worrying about it. And we take them on vacation. The two oldest with Kaneen, like I said, we've had her 5 years. And I wanted to make sure I did something special for her before she graduates next year. So I took her and one of our other little guys, he's 12, and I just flew him because they'd never been in airplanes. And so I took him to Vegas about 2 weeks ago and just took him to Circus. And spent the time in the motel and just, you know, gave them some experiences they'd never had before as far as, you know, new foods. And that's one other thing about the kids that we found out that they're not picky as far as what they eat. I haven't had one that's picky yet. And so it's like, hey, they're, like I said, they're just thankful to have that next meal, I think. So,
what have you learned from this whole experience? What is one of the main things that you feel you've gotten from being a foster parent?
Wow, an awful lot. I think, you know, I was a single mom for about 12 years. And I thought it was kind of hard. Sorry. No, I thought at times it was kind of hard for us. It was kind of a struggle. No, I mean, these kids, they've been a real blessing because they make me think how blessed we really were. I mean, I look back and I think we had a lot, and we just didn't realize how much we had. Because these kids, when they come, some of them come with nothing. I'm sorry. And others come with just, you know, garbage bags of little tiny things. Or they, what they do come with, it's really in sad shape. And you think, it just really makes me know how blessed the rest of us, how good we have it. And it just also makes you know that, or makes you feel that, hey, I'm here, and I want to be here for them as long as I can be.